Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, listeners. Elizabeth here. Before we dive into today's episode, we want to take a moment to address something important. We've spent time reading through our comments and feedback, and it's become clear that we've overlooked the perspectives of some of our listeners in the discussion on education. This has understandably made some of you feel unwelcome and unheard. We're already working on ways to ensure a more inclusive dialogue moving forward, one where every member of our community feels seen, heard, and valued. Your feedback has been crucial in highlighting this issue, and we're grateful for your engagement and patience. All right, on with the show.
Hey, this episode may contain explicit language. Welcome to Karen Feeding, the show where we raise the next generation together, juntos. I'm Lucy Lopez. I'm also the host of the Mamacita Rica podcast. I'm la mama of Amelia, who's 13, going on 30, and Avery, who's 11. Our familia lives in Miami.
I'm Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer, contributor to Slate's Karen Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's just about 11, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of three littles, Henry, who's 11, Teddy, who's 7, and Oliver, who's 9. Why did that come out backwards? I don't know. We live in Tokyo, Japan.
First of all, I just want to point out the moms are out. It's just us three ladies. Let's handle this business. Today on the show, we're answering a question about soothing big feelings. This 7-year-old is showing some intense signs of anxiety and sadness. So how can her parents help soothe and de-escalate? Then we'll debrief with a round of everyone's favorite triumphs and fails. So let's get going. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll see you right back here for our question.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. This week's listener question comes from our email inbox.
I need help trying to figure out how to de-escalate my 7-year-old's feelings. Whenever she gets upset, I try to validate her by saying things like, "I see you're upset," and that sounds really hard. She seems to keep escalating until everything comes to a fever pitch. She'll start crying, "I feel like you wish you didn't have a kid like me." She said this to me right before she got out of the car at school, after I was exasperated that she didn't brush her teeth even though I told her to. And she'll say, "You're mad at me," when I most definitely am not. She's always been this way. There are times when she'll even yell, "I wish I was dead," and I have no idea what to do with it. There are no signs of self-harm, and I don't think outside these moments of intense feelings that she means it. She's been in therapy in the past for unrelated issues, and we talked about that. And I'm trying to figure out if this is anxiety talking. Due to her age before, no one really seemed willing to have a conversation yet as to whether she has anxiety or not, but the doctor did say to keep an eye on things. I just don't know what to do anymore. Many times I'll let her be until she calms down, but that doesn't feel right. She's such a funny, loving kid, and I feel so sad that I can't seem to help her more. Anyone have advice?
Jamila, would you like to take a bite out of this one?
I would. Let a writer just know that you are seen, heard, and understood. I have a child who deals with anxiety. I deal with anxiety. It wasn't as intense when she was 7 as it is now that she's 11, but it's still something that we've been managing for years. I found a lot of really great books about children with anxiety that could be helpful. The one that I want to suggest is What to Do When You Worry Too Much, A Kid's Guide to Overcoming Anxiety by Dawn Huebner. And it's an interactive self-help book that allows children and parents to do some writing together in moments of high anxiety. And it just seems like a really great book. I am often the person on the podcast recommending therapy, and I will recommend that again today. It sounds like what you're doing is really, you know, you're doing the right things by validating her feelings and saying, I see you're upset. I understand that this is really hard for you, but the fact that she's saying things along the lines like, I feel like you wish you didn't have a kid like me, you know, suggests that this may just be a little bit out of your depth by yourself. And that's completely fine. I know that she's been in therapy in the past for other things, but it may be time for her to return to therapy, you know, and maybe try a new therapist if you feel like the person you worked with last time wasn't effective.
I like that you're talking about, like, acknowledging that you tell your child that I see you're upset. That really sounds hard. But I also feel that I try to put myself in my kid's shoes sometimes. And when I'm pissed off, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anyone tell me that it's going to be okay. I want to be mad. I want to rage. And that's okay for your kid too. I'm just saying. I mean, during lockdown, ladies, is where we noticed that my Avery had a shift in behavior. She was chewing on everything, her shirt collar, the pencil tops, like anything that she could put her teeth on, she was chewing. And it was then when we realized it was clearly she was like self-soothing, and I didn't want to bring too much attention to it. I don't know why I didn't, but I felt like if I did, then she would act out on it more. And it felt, we just wanted to make sure that she was okay. So obviously we set her up with a therapist. We learned how to communicate with her, and that communication was giving her a lot of space to sort some of those big feelings on her own. And now when we see that perhaps she's like reverted back to chewing, and she's 11 now, I pointed out to her and I let her know that if she needs to talk, I'm here. And that talk usually happens right at bedtime when I'm done with the day and I'm completely exhausted, but I gotta pause and I gotta listen to where she has to say. And, you know, to Jamila's point, when a child threatens to harm themselves, no matter what, obviously find help. They may not even have the words to properly express those feelings, not only to you, but to themselves. For a really long time, my daughter used to say, it just feels like ever, and she would say ever to express frustration. Now it's a joke in the family. We would always say Avery's first bad word was ever. I highly recommend counseling and reassuring them in a way that is maybe not too obviously, you know, like not too obvious, like let them know, like, hey, you know, the only person in this family who gets all my jokes is you, and let them know that they're loved and that they're needed in the family, so they don't resort to that kind of language that they don't want to be here anymore.
I'm sorry, one thing you said I want to respond to, Lucy, that I think is a good point. There are times when you're frustrated and the last thing you want is to hear somebody saying, I understand that you're frustrated. Yes. You know, and in moments like that, one, I think that having a book like this where there's an activity that a child can do, you know, would be helpful. But two, like sometimes you just have to give your child a moment to themselves, you know, like say, hey, I see you're upset. I'm going to give you a few minutes, or why don't you go into your room until you're feeling a little bit better? I think that can be useful too.
I think giving yourself that moment too, like you don't have to respond to everything that your child says right then, to kind of see, like, give them a chance. Because I do think specifically here, we have this instance where two letter writer, you get on this crazy train a little bit. Like, you know, she tends to, the mornings seem to be hard, but yet we're going after the teeth brushing, which I totally get. This is right out of my playbook. Like, just keep asking, even though we know this is going to be a problem. And so giving myself that space to just think, like, is this the moment for this? Or is this likely to, like, start our day off? I did want to recommend two things just to help you have the conversation with a caregiver about, like, your doctor or your therapist about anxiety, which is to check out the Spence Children's Anxiety Scale. It's available online and you can go look at it and take a little test, have her take the test, like, whatever you need. Also, the Anxiety and Depression Association of America has some great screening tools. And I just find this is helpful because sometimes when I go in to talk to the doctor about these sort of things, I get lost in these kind of examples of she got mad about toothbrushing or this, as opposed to saying, like, actually, we have a number of these things that are on this scale. Or alternatively, we actually don't have very many of these things. We just have kind of this talking back and the this self-harm piece. I want to kill myself. I wish that you know, that I wasn't part of this family. And I think once you see diagnosis, at least what they're going to look at, it can help inform that conversation. Because I do want to offer the counterpoint that I know it seems early, but is it possible that we're dealing with puberty? And if you at all think that's the issue, you can go back to Jamila's interview with the authors of This Is So Awkward, Modern Puberty Explained. They actually just had a piece in the Washington Post that talked about, like, how the average age now for puberty is 8. And so having your 7-year-old all of a sudden have these kind of mood swings could very much be puberty. Now, this is not to say that you don't, of course, need to go get therapy or if you feel like it's anxiety. But one of the parts of the article actually says that it can be really hard to distinguish the difference between a child that is starting puberty because these mood swings are the first things that we're likely to see versus, like, an anxiety and depression. And of course, they recommend looking at persistence, intensity, like, are there other adjacent changes? And of course, say at the end of the day, the quote is, when in doubt, don't be the diagnostician. Instead, have someone trained in mental health help make the call. But I do think there's a chance that you these tools could maybe help you frame that conversation, particularly if when you're going in, your doctor is saying, like, I'm not sure this is anxiety, either to arm yourself for that conversation or also just kind of look at the other side of things.
You know, I just want to real quick say that maybe the day after your kid launches a bomb your way of, like, I don't belong in this family, you don't deserve a kid like me, I just because it helped me and perhaps it can help you, just point out something in her routine or something in your home that without her, it wouldn't be the same, you know, whether it's understanding your silly mom dad jokes or something that happened in the family that without them there, it wouldn't have been the same. This happened to us a few years ago where I had to constantly remind my now 13-year-old going on 30, hey, like, you're important, you're needed in our team, you're a valuable member of this team. And that did a lot for her. It soothed her, it made her think more about what she was going to say. And also, I was real with her. I let her know that some of that language was hurtful to me too. And I understand that, you know, her feelings and how she's feeling, but I don't, that it was hurtful when she said some of that stuff to me. I remember just looking at her and be like, well, that sucked. Go think about what you just said. And that shit hurt me when she said that to me. And I was like, go think about what you said and really think on it and come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially outside of the moment that it's happening, letting them know that this kind of talk also hurts you is important, right? Like, I think I've talked about, I think, both of these books before, but How to Pet a Porcupine, and then, of course, Finding the Magic in Middle School, which we had an interview on this podcast about. But both of those talk about sort of how we can deal with these preteen years and this kind of talk. And so if you're not really sure, I sometimes find reading these books to be good just to A, not feel alone, and B, to be like, okay, here are some strategies that I can have in these moments. And I mean, so much for me is taking that pause, like just shutting my brain down from what comes up defensively when they're saying these things, particularly because this child is saying something that, like, Henry says to me all the time, like, you're mad at me. They have such a hard time at this age figuring out the difference between, like, I'm actually not mad. I love you very much. This thing annoys me. But that's like a very nuanced thing to figure out. And so I think these books give some strategies on how to, like, provide the space, but also have these conversations about teeth brushing and, you know, these little fights that we have that are really important. It's really important that she brushes her teeth every day. But, like, how are we going to get there? Because it's not through nagging.
Do ladies feel that we should sometimes just let them figure it, like, let them figure it out? Like, sometimes I know, like, I want to solve everything right then and there. But it's like, I realize, okay, I got to let my kid hash out all this anger on her own, figure it out, give her space. And I feel that sometimes your child will let you know when is the right time. Does that make sense to anybody here?
Yeah.
Jamila?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that there are times where you can allow your child to do some de-escalation on their own, you know? But with a seven-year-old, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. Until you've got some proven strategies at work and you've gotten to a place where, like, okay, you can take 5 to 10 minutes by yourself, you can journal, you can draw, you know, just you can bring yourself down. I think for now it's important that the mother continues to intervene.
I do think it, and there's a difference too on the things that we can let them do on their own and the things they can't at seven, right? Like, there are opportunities for them to start doing that on themselves, and there aren't. Jamila just jogged my memory that there's a great, there are great journals between a parent and a child. They have some very cute ones, or of course you can just get a notebook, but particularly if you feel like these conversations that you're having about things just always turn heated, I would see if they're open to doing some letter writing to you or journaling. There are journals where they write something and then you write back and it's sort of this blank slate. Like, they're allowed to say whatever they want in this journal and then you're going to read it and respond. And I have found that to be helpful, particularly with Henry and I, because I'm much calmer when I sit with it. Like, I'm able to be way more empathetic sitting and seeing that they took the time to write something out to me, right? And really think about where they are coming from, than sometimes these conversations that happen just before they get out of the car. I'm a big fan of the Big Life Journal. They have an actual journal that you can work on that talks a lot about like negative self-talk. If you, it talks about a lot of things, growth mindset, all of that. But they actually have a kind of, they call it a masterclass, but for adults, that is your child's negative self-talk into self-love. And I just think if you're not sure where to go and you want to be doing some stuff proactively at home, that's a really easy place to start, just to kind of start educating yourself on how you can be a better resource at home. Because I think so often in these, like, we don't really know what to do either, right? Like, we know that what's happening isn't right and we know that we need help. And even if you get therapy going, you have to change the behavior at home. So can you also kind of make yourself a coach for your child? Or even for yourself?
Yeah, I was just going to say for yourself, because sometimes, you know, I don't know, sometimes they'll say things that, you know, going back to the, hey, you hurt my feelings, I just want to grab her by her shoulders and shake her. And I know that's wrong, obviously, but yeah, that journaling sounds like a great idea for me right now.
Just saying. You write a letter to her?
I'm going to write a letter to her.
Please write me back.
Dear Avery.
Where are my
headphones? Let's have a chat. Where are my headphones? Can't steal my stuff. We'd love to know what you think. You can email us at KarenFeedingPod@slate.com or our favorite option, leave us a voicemail, 646-357-9318. We're always excited to hear from you. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in a second for triumphs and fails. Fails. We're back and moving on to a segment we call Triumphs and Fails. Elizabeth, do you have a triumph or fail for us?
Guys, I have a fail. Okay. So I know I've told you Oliver, my middle, is neurodivergent, and I am not sure what's going on lately, but for whatever reason, his ability to sit still at any event, but particularly at meals, is making me crazy. Like, I'm not a big yeller, except I would say when I'm overstimulated, I'm most likely to yell. But in general, I feel like I am the parent that is like, okay, this child has this like sensory need. I am like moments from screaming at meals all the time. I'm just like, sit down. You need to sit down. You need to come back to the table. Like mid-bite, he remembers that he wants something from the kitchen and wanders off into the kitchen. There's like no thought at all. And then he's like asking us at the fridge if we need things. It's like, no, we do not need the peanut butter at the set table. Come back. And he's like, oh yeah. And then he's like literally, he doesn't sit in the chair. He puts his feet, he like squats. And then he just like stands up and he's like eating standing on the bench. You know, and I'm like, sit down. He's like, oh, yes. Like, and then he doesn't even sit down. He like gets kind of down into a squat and like forgets that I've asked for the whole thing. So I'm just like, I'm completely exasperated at this. Listen, we are not asking for a long time. Our meals are relatively quick. Like it's crazy. I think the fail, though, is that I know he has ADHD. I know he cannot sit here. And instead of doing all of the things, if you wrote into the show, I would tell you what to do. Give them a sensory break. Have them do something before. Let them know that they can leave the table and go dance. I just get angry. I am so angry. And it's to I know. It's awful. Like, and I am, I feel like the other thing is then it sets this tone because I know it annoys Jeff and he has like learned that this is just something, but then because I'm angry, he is also like, why can't we all sit? I know it's worse because the kids are like at school and he is concentrates very hard on being good, you know, like good at school, like sitting at there at school. So when he gets home, it is just like he cannot. And I need to reframe before dinner. I need to like make an effort, like before I come down or before I call them, like give myself some kind of pep talk or post something in the kitchen for myself, because I am creating the havoc at the dinner table. Like now instead of the kids like telling us stuff, because mid-story I'm interrupting them to be like, Oliver, sit down. You know, like, please put your butt on the seat. And I just cannot seem to snap out of this. And it just feels so bad because I know what he needs and somehow I am just not, I'm just not giving it to him. It feels awful.
If I had a dollar for every time my husband Gino told Avery to sit, please sit right. I would have like $10 by the end of our dinner. And then he would have another $10 for every time I would say, Avery, go do some cartwheels and come back. Avery, go, can you show me how that dances? So yeah. She can just get it out before she comes to sit down. And he's looking at me, he's like, I feel like you're encouraging it. I'm like, I'm not. This kid clearly doesn't know how to sit on a chair as much as we try to drill it in. She just can't. Yeah. She literally perches on there like a T-Rex.
This is what he does. This is, he sits on the bench like this and then food is everywhere because he's nowhere close to the table. And then he's like holding something and he just stands up on the bench because he's telling us the story. So one time this week he stood on the table. On the table.
If I'm going to send you guys a picture of my daughter Avery literally standing on our kitchen table trying to have a conversation with my parents, and their look is priceless.
Like horrified.
Like priceless, because not only does she like to perch on the chair like a T-Rex to eat, but she also likes to eat with her hands. She only does this at home. She doesn't do this at school.
Yeah, we're the same.
She won't just, at home, she will eat everything with her hands.
Yeah, it's that sensory seeking. I mean, we've been in occupational therapy for all of us. And I know that it's just like he needs all of that because he's not getting it. But it is annoying the shit out of me.
I think it's a triumph because you acknowledge it and because you're laughing about it. How about that? I don't think it's a fail.
Well, I'm laughing about it now. Last night I was not laughing. I was like banging my head on the table. And then he's like, Mom, what's wrong? I'm like, my poor, sweet, empathetic child. You know, and I've got the 11-year-old is like doing the tip back on his chair, which also makes me crazy. I'm like, you are going to go through our paper Japanese walls. put your four on the floor. It's like, and I know, listen, the amount of times that four on the floor was said to me at school and around my house, and I still find myself tipping back on chairs. It's like, I should be empathetic, and I am just not. I do feel better venting about it, but cartwheels before dinner, that is down the street.
Jamila, I by the way, Jamila, I'm dying to say your name as Cuban as possible, which would be either Yamila or Jamila.
So it is Jamila.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Okay, then I was saying it right. Jamila. Okay, good. Please share with us triumphs, fails. What's up? How's it going?
I have a fail.
Oh, yeah.
So not too long ago, it was time to apply for middle schools for Naima. And I applied for a school that we had talked about a bit over the years, and I'd heard good things about it. I toured it. I liked it. You know, other kids from her elementary school go there. You know, I thought it would be a good fit. She seemed cool with it. But then she started hearing some not so great things about it. And she heard about another school that one of her good girlfriends would be going to. And she really wanted to go there. So I went back online and I applied for the second school. And so the acceptance letters went out yesterday. And she got into the first school, but not the second school. Mm-hmm. And I called the second school. And they said that basically, once you get into one magnet school, you probably are not going to get even waitlisted for one of the other ones. So she's upset. The woman at the school she wants to go to told me, well, like, email me her name and I'll see if she's on the waitlist. You know, it's pretty much all I can do. And now I feel awful because there's so many middle schools here, and the process of like exploring them is so complicated, and just the way that they're set up on the LAUSD website is not like easy to explore them. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can't say I'm looking for a school that does this, I'm looking for a school that does that. You know, it's just like this exhaustive list of schools that I know nothing about. You know, you have to like go onto their websites and try to find out information about them. And I guess I'm afraid that Naima is going to be stuck. There's the possibility of her going to another school for 7th and 8th grade. It's the middle school where her stepmom works, but that is an elite private school that's very expensive. So it depends on how much of a, you know, we don't know yet how much of a break on tuition she's going to get for being an employee. And, you know, I don't know about scholarships, you know, like if we'd qualify for one, you know, just kind of be in that trap of like not making enough to pay for it, but making too much maybe to get a scholarship, you know. And so I really like the school that I chose from her, and I think she would do fine there, but she's just like completely opposed to it.
Damn. I feel you. I feel you on the whole, like, you missed something.
Yeah.
So I feel you.
No, you didn't know that applying to one would somehow, like, I would have assumed you apply, you get in, you get to choose. But that's not how it works. That's kind of what you assumed, right?
Yes. And also, like, to be fair, I didn't apply to the school she wants the first go around because I didn't know about it. You know, I didn't find out about it till later. So I went updated, you know, I did a second application, which is really confusing because, like, on the website, it doesn't even say anything about this second school. You know, it mentions the school she got into and another school she got waitlisted for that I don't even remember applying for. Like, I've never heard of this school, so I'm not sure how she got on their waitlist.
Are her concerns about the school things that you're also concerned about? Or are they like, this is like hearsay from other students, or like her friends aren't going there? Like, do you have a good sense?
So there's an employee at her after school program that told her that the school is racist, which I was pretty surprised to hear because the positive things I'd heard about the school were coming from families that also have black children.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, you know, obviously this person at her after school program is an adult and would have been there, you know, many years ago. And then she also heard another story of there being fights at the school, and one of her former classmates, somebody who graduated a year or two before her from her elementary school, transferring out because there were too many fights going on.
Okay. Unclear.
I think the biggest thing is, like, she wants to be with her friends.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if it was more like this, you know, coming from a place of, like, I'm super nervous, I don't really want to make this transition, but my friend is going to this other school.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. I hear you, though.
Yeah.
It's not fun. It's not fun to feel like somehow you were responsible for them not getting something that they wanted, even though you weren't really responsible. All right.
Well, I have a triumph.
Oh, Lucy has a triumph. Okay, she's going to break our...
Listen.
Tell us, Lucy.
I'm about to sprinkle some sunshine on this rain cloud. Y'all know I have two girls, and girls that sometimes fight and argue over, like, the silliest things. They've been at each other's throats for days, and it felt like it was never ending. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, what are we gonna do? Having all the right conversations, like, this is your sister. One day you're gonna grow up and be college girls, and the only person you'll be able to give your back at a bar is your sister. Like, I feel like I'm saying all the right things. Anyways, so this past weekend, Amelia, my oldest, was performing with her theater club. And, you know, we all went. It was like me, Gino, my husband, Avery went with us, my parents. They're all sitting there, we're watching her up on stage. Everybody's just like, wow. And I look over, and Avery, full on tears, crying. And I'm like, what is happening? I go, I whisper, are you okay? She's like, I've never been so proud. I'm like, what is, are we having a moment of compassion and empathy and love? And is that, I'm living a Pixar movie. So show's over. Amelia walks off stage. Avery runs up to her with, like, a giant bouquet of flowers that she picked out herself at the grocery store. Hands her the bouquet of flowers. She starts crying again and hugs her. And I kid you not, says, even though we had a big fight, the biggest fight ever over eyebrow gel. Over eyebrow gel. You're my best friend and I love you and I'm so proud of you. Said all these words. I look around. My dad's crying. My mom's crying. My husband's crying. And I did not cry. I was like, yes. And this is good. You absorbed everything we've been trying to hammer over your little heads all freaking month. Here it is. And I enjoyed the moment. And it was a massive triumph. Anybody who's raising girls knows what the fights are like over skincare, borrowed shoes, and clothes. And just to see that little moment and understand that they really do love each other and they really care for each other was, like, the best moment ever. So that was my triumph.
Aww.
That's lovely.
That's super sweet.
I know. Speaking of triumphs, excuse me. Come in. Say, saluda. Say hello.
Hola.
Hola.
Hi. That's Avery. Thank you. See ya.
Got my headphones back.
She was so calm returning stolen goods.
This kid genuinely is the definition of IDGAF. Like,
she wasn't like, hey, sorry, you clearly needed these for the last 37 minutes.
So those are some triumphs, some fails. Listeners, as always, we want to hear your parenting stories too. Did you have a particularly great triumph or a funny fail? Send them to us. We might share them on our show. You can write to us at our email address, KarenFeedingPod@slate.com, or leave a voicemail at 646-357-9318. We want to know what y'all think. So please be sure to reach out to us and keep the conversation going. That's our show. Subscribe,
leave a rating, a review, and tell all your friends, all of them. And if you want more parenting advice, you can find Care and Feeding, the column, on slate.com. This episode of Care and Feeding is produced by Maura Curry, with special thanks to Rosemary Belson. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. For Elizabeth Newcamp and Jamila Lemieux, I'm Lucy Lopez. Thanks for listening.